Welcome to the That Healing Feeling podcast. I'm your host, Faith Ashenden, founder and CEO of That Healing Feeling, where we show you how to become a self-healer of mind, body, and spirit through nervous system regulation. Join me and thousands of my other students as I dive into the world of neuroscience, subconscious programming, energetics, and radical self-love. In this podcast, you will learn that your body and mind are meant to heal, and that under the right circumstances, we can experience miraculous healing by leveraging our own internal infrastructure. Let me guide you as we challenge preconceived notions and outdated narratives and dive into the empowering world of self-healing. My intention is that you leave this podcast full of hope and actionable tools. So without further ado, let's dive in. Hello, and welcome back to the That Healing Feeling podcast. I hope you are doing well today. It is a beautiful sunny day here in England, and I feel like we've been in summer now for, I don't know, what are we in now, June? Like a while, and it's been freezing. Like I've been putting the underfloor heating on. So the fact that I am able to actually say the sun is out is all very exciting for me. I hope it's sunny where you are and that it is just brightening your day spiritually, mentally, and physically. And I know that is exactly what this podcast is going to do because I am interviewing a literal ray of sunshine, Maddie Miles. You might know her on Instagram as The Maddie Miles. She is a hormone guru and an herbalist. Well, that's what I call her. I'll announce her official credentials here in a little bit. So I just want to give you a little information about what you are about to hear. And I think that you should have your notes ready because this turned out to be not just like a podcast episode itself, but kind of a mini course. Maddie is really generous with her time and her knowledge and her wisdom. And she is literally spitting out so many actionable tips for those of us who are looking to heal different areas of our life, not just our nervous system, but our hormones, and then specifically how to target specific hormones depending on where you are in your journey. So there are lots of tips here that I know you're going to go ahead and implement right away. So make sure you have your notes out. Make sure you're sipping on a nice cup of tea. And let's dive into one of my favorite episodes that I've ever recorded. Before we do, I'm going to give you a little bit more information about Maddie so you are well acquainted as we dive in. So Maddie Miles is a board certified integrative health practitioner, women's health and hormone expert, and clinical herbalist. But more important than her qualifications is her passion, knowledge, and success at helping people heal naturally. She offers a range of products that support women in nourishing their cells, supporting their liver and gut, and guiding their hormones to balance with their herbal remedy for PMS, ovulation support, and menstrual cycle regularity. I'm looking at her shop now. She actually has a sleepy tincture, a bitters tincture, a soothe tincture, and a trio bundle, as well as a series of books that you can use to support yourself in tracking your cycle and harmonizing your hormones. Her products are next level. We both are from Austin, and I have known her since before she started her business. When she released her tinctures, she blew up, as in everyone who tried them loved them. And you'll see that by the reviews on her sites and on her social media. I hope that you truly, truly find this episode as intellectually and spiritually nourishing as I did. Enjoy. All right. Well, welcome to the show, Maddie. I'm so excited to have you actually back on the show since I first launched my podcast.
Yes. Hi, Faith. Hi, all listeners. I'm so excited to be here. And yeah, I totally forgot. I was on your podcast when you first started and we did it in person. We were here in Austin, Texas, and now you're in a whole other country. And yeah, times are very different now, but honored to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yes, yes, yes. Like life flies by. We were
I think we were like both just starting our podcast, or maybe you already had yours. I can't remember. But here we all are in a full circle moment, and your business has blown up. I've loved watching your success, and most importantly, how you inspire women and empower women to take ownership of their health, understand their bodies, and I don't know, you're kind of like all over. Everyone I know is like, have you heard of Maddie? Did you know this about Maddie? And I'm like, yes, actually, I knew her in Austin. So I'm really excited to dive into all these questions that I know my listeners are going to feel really empowered by, because they're things that always come up in my calls in HTA and in the membership and all of that. But first, can we just talk about your business and primarily, you know, who do you serve? What problem do you solve, et cetera?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, you've mentioned that before when you're on my podcast, and that's so sweet. It really is. I mean, you know, especially when it comes to like the world of natural health and medicine, it is pretty small and boutique still. It's definitely growing, but anyway, so beautiful. So I serve predominantly women, and I mostly focus on the year's preconception. So this doesn't mean that I don't work with men. I do. I have brothers. I have male best friends, my boyfriend. So my own father, like, of course I work with men. I work with, you know, all humans of all ages as well. So I just am particularly passionate about working with women because, well, I'm a woman and I struggled with my health for more of my life, especially my younger life than not. And I felt very misunderstood and at times very disrespected by the traditional, or I don't like using the word traditional because it's really not, but by allopathic medicine. And so I just knew that there was a need for some real powerful advocates in the women's health space. And I am by no means the only one. Faith herself is as well an advocate for us all, and there are plenty of women of all ages. So I am just a part of that crew. And again, just, you know, focusing on women, again, mostly before they decide to get pregnant. So this is in the years of, you know, really trying to regulate hormones and menstrual cycles, supporting ovulation, if there's PCOS, endometriosis, or some sort of hormone gynecologic issue going on, I really focus on that. If there is desire to come off of hormonal contraceptive and to start tracking one cycle naturally, that is like my, you know, my jam as well. So yeah, that's really where I focus. But again, I mean, my background is in clinical herbalism and integrative health and naturopathy. So, you know, I can work with all people, and I even work with my grandparents on a lot of stuff because they've become super interested in their health. But to conclude that, and to really answer your question, my niche is women in their primary fertile years.
This is so freaking important, because obviously, you know, my clients are women probably in similar-ish demographic, as well as spanning, you know, even all the way up to 60, 65. But a lot of my clients come to me, like you said, you work with everyone. However, you primarily, or perhaps have a special focus in these sort of preconception years. A lot of people come to me because they want to get pregnant. And they feel like they've tried everything under the sun and it's not working for them. And on top of that, they are like, you know, kind of which came first, the chicken or the egg, because obviously it can become a very stressful process if you're not getting pregnant. And so they have this hypervigilance and all of these neural pathways of fear in regards to anything in the fertility space. And it's all like perpetuating itself. And so they end up with me. And we work a lot on one of the pillars, I suppose, if you will, or components of fertility, which my area, of course, my expertise is really just like lowering stress in a nutshell, in a very simplistic way. But, you know, this is a huge, huge, huge portion of my demographic. And so I feel like this episode and your knowledge is so, so important. There's so many kind of like different avenues I want to go into and pick your brain on, but I think it would be prudent to start with, what does it even mean to have hormonal regulation? Like in kind of like layman's terms, and even like, what are those hormones? What hormones need to be regulated in, you know, for us to be kind of at that like optimal health? And not just for fertility, but perhaps let's talk about women as a woman in our 20s, 30s, whatever. What does that look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, great question. So, well, there are so many different hormones, and I think I must preface with what hormones are. So hormones are chemical messengers produced by various glands in the body, including the ovaries, adrenal glands, thyroid gland, and pituitary gland. And they are important because they're responsible for coordinating and regulating numerous bodily functions, including our menstrual cycles, our fertility, our mood, our metabolism, our overall physiological balance. Our bodies, our minds, everything is changing throughout our cycles. And that's because of our hormones. So I'm sure most of us by now have heard of our menstrual cycle and that it is comprised of four phases. And these four phases are characterized by such beautiful and powerful shifts and changes in our hormones that more or less, they make us four different versions of ourselves, physiologically speaking, throughout the cycle. So our hormones have a lot of reign, a lot of power, and they are essential for maintaining a healthy reproductive system and ensuring optimal functioning of our entire female body and mind. They work together in a delicate balance, and any disruption or dysregulation, as you mentioned, can lead to a range of symptoms and potential health concerns as well. So everything from as perhaps minute as the occasional headache or cramp to as extreme as PCOS or endometriosis or infertility. That being said, proper hormone regulation is truly vital for healthy regular ovulation and an overall healthy regular vitalized menstrual cycle. And the two main hormones that are involved in this process for females are estrogen and progesterone. That being said, there are many other hormones that we have, sex hormones, as well as stress hormones. And then we have, you know, our leptin, our ghrelin. There are so many hormones that are signaling throughout the body, and all of them are important. But for women, it's estrogen and progesterone that really lead the show for our cycle. So the first half of the cycle, it's really estrogen dominant. And then the latter half of the cycle, it's progesterone. Progesterone kicks in if we ovulate. It's really the only way our body makes healthy, optimal amounts of progesterone. And they have so many benefits, both of these hormones do. But they, you know, very importantly, help to prepare the uterus for potential pregnancy and regulate the release of an egg from the ovaries. So imbalances in estrogen and or progesterone can cause irregular periods, heavy or painful menstruation, or even just complete absent periods. So if our period is absent, that is because we are also not ovulating, and that proposes, you know, we can't get pregnant if we're not ovulating. So it proposes infertility issues as well. And I'll kind of just go into fertility a little bit as well. So hormone regulation is especially important for fertility. And so aside from estrogen and progesterone, we also have the interplay of hormones like follicle stimulating hormone, FSH, and luteinizing hormone, LH. Estrogen, progesterone, also testosterone. Yes, us females, we also have testosterone circulating throughout our body. It particularly peaks around ovulation. It is not as high as men do, but men also have estrogen as well. It's like we all have these hormones. It's just the levels to which we have them really dictate the show. Irregular ovulation or an imbalance in hormones can affect fertility and make it very challenging to achieve pregnancy. So I'm very happy that women are seeing the importance as well of seeing you, Faith, because it's so much more than just what you eat or your herbals, right? It's like we need to really support our entire nervous system so that our body can do what it innately knows how to do, which is to menstruate and to ovulate and to have these cycles and to have these fluctuations of our hormones. Like this is what we're supposed to do. And so some common signs of hormone dysregulation, I can talk about that. So obviously you can ask me to dive any deeper on certain hormones and why it's important, but I feel like I got that point across of like our hormones are so important for so much. And when our hormones are being produced in high amounts or not produced enough, or they're not being metabolized properly due to some liver imbalances, some of these symptoms can include irregular menstrual cycles, frequent or infrequent periods. This could also be like heavy bleeding, skipped periods, cramps, also mood swings and emotional changes, weight changes, metabolism issues, fatigue, low energy, sleep disturbances, skin issues, including hormonal acne, changes in libido, hair and hair growth changes. So, you know, our hormones have a lot to do with our overall health, not just our fertility and our ability to ovulate. You know, those hormones and ovulation and just our, yeah, hormones and ovulation alone have such a profound impact on our body. Again, like the way that our skin looks, to the strength and the vitality of our hair, to our mood, to our weight, to how we can, you know, beyond just like our mood and how we feel like emotionally, how we actually think, like how we critically think and analyze, that changes throughout our cycle. So yeah, it's incredibly important. And then of course, you know, on the flip side of that, when things are going well and your hormones are regulated, you just feel great. You feel energized and your mood feels super steady. You don't feel like the littlest thing like makes you want to just start bawling your eyes out, which I think some of us can raise our hand of like, you know, we've gone through times of dysregulation and balance where we're like, yeah, raising my hand over here. Like, you know, I just started crying at random things. So we just feel steady. And so, you know, we're not always experiencing this crazy high energy. Of course not. That's usually categorized with follicular, especially like middle towards end of follicular in our fertile window and a little bit into our luteal phase. We're not always supposed to have high energy. Like I mentioned before, we change throughout our cycle. We're physiologically speaking, we're four different humans throughout our cycle. But even when you are experiencing those lower those times of lower hormones and lower energy, you still feel steady. You feel healthy and you don't feel weak, right? Like physically or emotionally compromised. So we know when things are going well. And I feel like it's tougher to notice when things are going well until things start to not go well. And then we go, oh, I can tell, right? So, and unfortunately, many women do not feel well. And we have just been incredibly misunderstood and misled by our doctors, by our medical professionals, because many of them don't even take one class on female physiology. So, you know, it doesn't make them bad humans. It's just like, how can someone help you if they don't know how to? So that's why, you know, luckily we have plenty of health specialists out there who do study female physiology and endocrinology and can actually support in a natural way too, right? Because the only reason why anything ever gets out of balance or out of whack in our body is because there's a root cause, right? Like there's an underlying root cause and it can be addressed and it should be addressed in order to actually heal the body. So it's very encouraging as well to know that there's always a rhyme and a reason for everything going on within our body. You know, we're not like lemons. We're not just like, you know, defective human beings. Like we really can support the body. We can support the systems of the body so that our hormones are being produced and excreted and metabolized properly so that all of the organs and the glands and the systems of the body are working well. And it's very easy to tell when that's out of balance.
That was so beautiful. And I was nodding along. Obviously, there's no video in this, but I was nodding along because I think what comes across so loud and clear from what you're saying, and honestly, from what, you know, the very few people I bring on the podcast have to say, is that the body is made to fight for homeostasis. Like the body in and of itself, like that is the goal, and the body can heal. Another thing that I find really interesting that you mentioned that is what I always find to be the case, is that especially women get really used to just feeling like crap when any sort of dysregulation or imbalance occurs, any sort of insult to homeostasis, I guess. And so many women, because women are really incredibly strong, right? We're built to be incredibly strong and resilient. And like even myself, and I don't know if you relate to this or not, but like for so long, I thought that feeling this way was just like how one felt. Basically, like one does not wake up with energy. One does not sleep well. One has all sorts of issues going on, hormonal acne, hair loss, all this stuff. Like I kind of just like normalized it because that's in a sense like what we do as humans. Like we just kind of acclimate to whatever circumstance we're in and push forward. And it isn't until you like lose your health and then find it again that you can really like appreciate as well and experience like what that contrast is and how abnormal it is to not feel balanced. And you like, I think that's the word you use, and maybe you use something different, but like of course you're not going to have like huge amounts of energy every single day all the time, but like there's a sort of balance or calm, or I literally just use the word homeostasis, within the body when you are well that so many people do not experience. And I can appreciate that I also am working with a population of people who are, of course, like in the category of chronically imbalanced in some way. But I would say that the majority of women are walking around with some sort of like imbalance or some sort of inflammation or something going on and thinking that that is just the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would 100% agree with you. I mean, heck, I even can relate to that. For many years, I just thought, oh, I think this is what's normal, what I'm supposed to feel like. And to give myself some credit, it's also what message is given to us by doctors, allopathic doctors, and by society as a whole, is that like women are these, you know, crazy emotional, you know, sick and unhealthy beings, and that's just like the norm. And on the note of emotional, air quotes, we are, but that's our superpower as well. You know, like I want to bring back like a positive connotation to that word, because we all have hormones. It's again, hormones dictate the show. So don't we all want to be hormonal? You know, like that's how we operate. And also, you know, we know and we can predict how our hormones will be. Again, if our body is given what it needs to not just survive, but to thrive, we know exactly where our hormones will be depending on where we're at in our cycle. We're very predictable human beings. It's when we get out of whack that things can tend to become unpredictable. But that's not the norm. You know, it's common to be out of balance, but that's not the norm. It doesn't have to be our norms. So it's like just spend, you know, whether it's a few weeks or a few months, however long your body needs, regulating your cycle, regulating your hormones, bringing your body, your nervous system, your mind, everything back to homeostasis. And then you can live that symptom-free, that pain-free life. And yeah, regain the power of that word hormonal, right? Like it's like, yeah, we're hormonal and that's our superpower.
Absolutely. Amen. It's like all I want to say. Yes, amen. Okay, so let's talk about, like, now that we have this foundational understanding, let's talk about what happens to and like the beautifully balanced body when, from a hormonal standpoint, when we experience chronic stress.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So when we experience chronic stress and our cortisol and our adrenaline, norepinephrine, when our stress hormones, because we have hormones that are specifically there to regulate stress response, to get things started, right? Because when we're stressed out, our mind doesn't know, are we stressed out because we are actually in a life-endangering situation, or are we stressed out because We just, for example, opened up our email and have 100 emails after a vacation, and we are stressed out because of that. So since our beautifully intricate minds, this goes for women and men too, but I'll focus on women. Since our mind can't decipher, again, why we are stressed, and also usually, let's say we're opening up that email, that's what's stressing us out. Many of us are not being very conscious. Just not being very conscious of our thoughts, right? So we're usually then fueling that stress response of like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I'm stressed out. So anyway, then kicks in our innate stress response. It is this beautiful system that has been with us since the beginning of time, because back in the day, before we had these secured homes and, you know, a much more protected, so to say, life. I know that everyone has a different situation, but we were sleeping out in the wild, you know, when it was dark outside. It was a time of a little bit of fear, right? And danger of like, are we going to be attacked? And we had to keep our guard up. So anyway, I know everyone's heard the analogy like running from the lion. So I'm like, how can I say that differently? But anyway, we have this beautiful system that is just innate. It's wise. It knows what to do. But unfortunately, it still can't decipher like, do we really need to kickstart? Like, I know Maddie thinks she's stressed right now, but she's really just like having to clean the house. She's not like actually like in a life-threatening situation. We just can't decipher that. So anyway, those hormones start to kickstart. Now, it's totally okay for this to happen in the acute term. It's actually very healthy. Again, that's why the system is built into us to begin with, because it can be utilized in a very healthy and beneficial way. Also, you know, cortisol, for example, when that spikes during a workout, let's say, and then inflammation spikes a little bit. Again, even inflammation and cortisol, they are not inherently negative things. They're healthy and they're supposed to be a part of our human physiological processes. However, most of us are just stuck in this chronic state where these stressed hormones are constantly firing. Or maybe not they're constantly firing. For some people, perhaps yes, but really it's that we are too much in that state and not enough in our parasympathetic state, which we need. I would argue we need to be more in our parasympathetic than not, especially when you factor in our sleep, right? Which we're sleeping for 8 to 9 hours a day, and then you're trying to also get into that parasympathetic while you're eating meals. So that's another, you know, it could be up to 3 hours a day, you know, like I would argue that we actually should be more in parasympathetic and that we should tap into the sympathetic, that drive mode, whether it's while we're working or while we're working out, not as much as we should be in the rest and digest and the heal state. So anyway, most of us are way too far in the sympathetic. And that just causes inflammation. It's chronic inflammation, which is not good. And when we're in that state for too long, our body is going to, for women, it's going to almost like picture like a dial, like, you know, a dial for the volume in your car. It's going to turn that back a little bit on reproductive function. Because as I mentioned before, our reproductive health is incredibly important for our bone health, our brain, our heart, you know, our hormones really run the show. However, we can survive without it for a good amount of time. Now, are we going to feel our best? No. Are we going to be the healthiest versions of ourselves? Absolutely not. But we can survive nonetheless. So our bodies are very smart, and, you know, our body only has so much energy to give to certain processes on a daily basis. Also, a little side shout out to food, proper nutrition, is that this helps to fuel a lot of these processes, which is why, you know, eating is so important. And I always want to emphasize that because of my history when I was younger with an eating disorder and really abusing that. And food is so beautiful. It's nutrition, it's medicine, but it also is, it's joy, and it's a way to connect with people and connect with plants and the earth and animals. But anyway, so I digress as always. Our body will dial back on reproductive function so that it can divert energy to, again, it just thinks that you're stressed out, whether it's, you know, our body's like, is she stressed out because we're in famine, or, you know, we're constantly running from this lion, or like, what is going on? You know, like, we are just constantly stressed out. So then cue the infertility issues. And again, like fertility is way more than just, even if you never want to get pregnant, or you do, but not for years and years and years. Fertility, again, it's our hormone health, it's ovulation, it's our entire ovulatory menstrual cycle. So it has many, many benefits. And some symptoms, aside from just not ovulating, could be anxiety because we're not producing that progesterone. So all of a sudden we feel super anxious and our mood feels very unstable. Our nervous system feels very unstable. It could be hormonal acne. It could be breast tenderness. It could be the weight fluctuations. It could be the cramping or really heavy periods when you do get a period, which my guess and what I've seen to be true more often than not would be an irregular period. But when that irregular period does show up, it's super painful, it's super heavy. So those are like the key signs that something is off with your reproductive health. And it's worth just assessing your life and, you know, what's going on? Why is this happening? And if it is stress for you, then that's, you know, pretty awesome, because that's something very easy for us to, I know some of you probably want to pinch me and be like, it's not easy. But, you know, when considering all of the other possibilities for hormone dysregulation and gynecologic issues, stress is arguably one of the easiest to start working on, and you can do it right away. You can right away take a step back from everything you're doing and just sit in silence and focus on your breath. You can right away go take your shoes off and go stand barefoot in some grass. I know it goes, you know, beyond this and it needs to be worked on daily, but my point is that we do have full control over our perception of our reality, our perception, our interpretation, and how we can take care of ourselves as well. So that is a long way of answering your question.
No. I love the long ways, because it's giving lots of examples that people can relate to. Like sometimes you need to mention a specific symptom for someone to be like, oh yeah, I am experiencing that. And perhaps an individual hasn't considered or made the connection. You know, like everything is kind of tied together in one way or the other, but it's important. It's important to give all the description. And like you said, a lot of people aren't talking about it. Like I know I hear women all the time being like, yeah, I've been to my OB-GYN so many times. I've been to my internist, whatever. And everything's fine. Everything's okay. So I think it's important and very validating for you to be touching on this, because these are real problems that real women are experiencing all around us every single day. And to hear, like you said, there is always a root cause. And to hear someone like you who's so knowledgeable touch on that with so much empathy and understanding is really important. So I love you expanding on the topic. So, okay, yes, absolutely right. We talk a lot about cortisol and inflammation and how it's important to differentiate between acute and chronic and what that means and implications and all of that good stuff. Now, can you talk about just a little bit of like a snapshot when we are talking about chronic stress specifically? For example, you mentioned cortisol, which is like a big kind of like hot topic one in this space, especially when we're talking about nervous system regulation. What happens? Like, what are the implications on sleep, on weight gain, on blood sugar, you know, whatever, when we are dealing with someone who is living in chronic stress? And I emphasize this because my population of women that I work with, primarily, I would say like 98% of them are living in chronic stress. And we're talking about not 6 months or a year, some people 10 years, 15 years. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think it would be prudent to kind of like dive into that and explain like, here's what's actually going on underneath the surface.
Yes. And yeah, that's an amazing question. And I also just wanted to say, but you're speaking, I didn't want to cut you off, that, you know, I'm happy that you even asked the question about stress, because most women are going into their PCP and experiencing irregular cycles, painful cycles, you name it, PCOS, endometriosis. And usually stress is the last thing to be addressed. And usually for most women, it's one of the most important things that we need to address. So it's incredibly important, I think, too often than not, people can get too like technical, right, with things. And in reality, it's our bodies are simpler than that. Like, we just need to give our bodies what they need. And more often than not, we also need to remove what is no longer serving ourselves as well. So it's always just worth like, I usually do like a monthly audit, usually while I'm on my period, of like, okay, what happened this past cycle, this past month that I did like? What is serving me? What's not serving me, et cetera. So thank you for even asking me that. Okay, so let's talk about the connection between cortisol and stress and sleep, weight gain, blood sugar, et cetera. So sleep is incredibly important for just about everything. It's important for our cognitive health. It's important for our physical health, for hormones, everything. When sleep happens, sleep is pretty magical. And I'm talking about like really deep quality REM sleep. So this is when, and even outside of REM, because we, you know, only REM for a little bit each night, but sleep is when we are in full surrender mode, in full parasympathetic state. So this is when our body is really able to detoxify and to remove waste and to heal on a cellular level, to rejuvenate. So we can all feel when we do not sleep well, and it goes way beyond, you know, just waking up with a headache. It's like what's really going on underneath the surface on a biochemical level is dysregulation. And I'll give first like the not so positive news, and then the positive news is that one night of poor sleep, literally just one night of poor sleep, can really throw off our hormones, especially when we are talking about women and, you know, females. We have this beautifully powerful but also delicate endocrine system. So it can be thrown off by just as little as one night of poor sleep. But also, you know, what the great news is like just get to bed earlier the next night and get some great sleep and you'll wake up and you'll feel fine again. Of course, if the sleep issues have been going on chronically, you may need a little backstory. I actually suffered from insomnia for like 6 years of my life. I was in sleep clinics. I was, you know, in sleep studies. They were doing all these scans on my brain. I was prescribed Ambien and those harder medications, which of course never worked. And in fact, was just deteriorating my brain health. So I understand sleep issues. And I also understand, because I experienced this, that it did not, for me in that case, take just one night of good sleep to get back into the swing of things. It took like, it felt like a year of like sleeping a steady 9 hours a night. But, you know, things slowly but surely did get better. So if we are not sleeping well, a lot happens, but let's focus on cortisol. So first of all, high cortisol levels can interfere with sleep. So if we are feeling stressed out during the day and we have high cortisol levels, then this can impact our sleep. We may not be able to fall asleep, or perhaps we're waking up around like, you know, middle of the night or 2 to 3 a.m. And cortisol as a hormone follows a diurnal pattern, with the levels being highest in the morning and gradually decreasing throughout the day. So if this isn't happening, if it's flip-flopped, which many people with adrenal exhaustion experience, they wake up, they feel groggy because their cortisol isn't high as it should be in the morning. And then it starts to like kickstart later on in the day. So then they can't fall asleep and it just starts this vicious cycle. So chronic stress during the day can definitely disrupt that pattern. And then consequently, sleep disturbances can further exasperate stress levels, which creates a cycle of poor sleep and increased stress. In terms of weight gain, so chronic stress and elevated cortisol levels have been associated with weight gain, particularly the abdominal or visceral fat accumulation. A lot of people like, you know, refer to that lower tummy and the like love handle area due to high cortisol levels and that being dysregulated and just stress in general, right? People are just like, it's stress fat. And you know, they're not necessarily wrong. So, and when we're not sleeping well, again, like going back to what I was just saying, it starts this vicious cycle. So it doesn't matter which caused which first, right? Was it the stress that caused the poor sleep and then that caused more stress the next day and higher cortisol levels, or was it vice versa? It doesn't matter how it really started. Either way, we just need to work on nervous system regulation and reducing stress throughout the day so that you can sleep. And there are also herbals and supplements like magnesium and just great things that you can take beforehand, before bed, to support sleep as well. Blood sugar regulation, also, this gets out of whack. You know, we see and have studied this, but leptin and ghrelin levels, our hunger and our satiety hormones, get out of whack again just from literally just one night of poor sleep. So I say this not to create fear, of course not, but it's more so just knowing, because a lot of us like choose to not sleep well either. Like, it's not that we necessarily have sleep issues, but it's just like, oh, well, I want to, you know, keep watching my Netflix super late at night. So I more so say this as like inspiration for everyone to just really start prioritizing sleep and doing certain things during the day to support sleep later on that night, which I can mention some tips as well, if you would like me to. But blood sugar regulation really quickly. So cortisol also plays a huge role in regulating blood sugar levels. So cortisol being out of whack from stress during the day and or the lack of sleep at night is just going to impact blood sugar regulation and insulin regulation as well. And to explain a little bit of how this happens, like on kind of like a 101 level. So in times of high stress, cortisol promotes the release of glucose into the bloodstream, providing energy to deal with the stressor at hand. However, this prolonged elevation of cortisol can impair insulin sensitivity and disrupt balance between insulin and glucose regulation. So this can lead to chronically elevated blood sugar levels and potentially increase the risk of developing insulin resistance and even type 2 diabetes over time. And this is why it's incredibly important, if you've ever followed anyone who is like an expert in PCOS or educates on it as like a PCOS coach, as always a part of the protocol is like reducing stress. No matter like what your main culprit of PCOS is, like what your main symptoms are, it's always reducing stress and finding ways to bring more joy into your life. And how you can also really support your circadian diurnal rhythm is right away. First thing when you get up in the morning is you go outside and you get fresh air, fresh sun, and fresh, if the sun's not out, just like fresh light as well. Like seeing natural light before blue light is going to be incredibly beneficial for just right away kickstarting that healthy circadian rhythm. Also, limiting caffeine consumption before 11 a.m. So caffeine has a half-life of 6 hours. So it's in our system fully. And obviously, this is very person-dependent because we all metabolize caffeine differently. So for some people, it's out of their system sooner. But if you're like me and has a double MTHFR genetic mutation and just in general is not the greatest at detoxifying, then for me, I know that like my stop point for caffeine is really like 10 a.m. because I want to get in bed by 10 p.m. and have absolutely no caffeine in my system. Also, everyone just remember, I really suffered from sleep issues for a long time. So I'm definitely a lot more careful and delicate with my sleep and my circadian rhythm as a whole. Earthing as well barefoot to the ground first thing in the morning and throughout the day is incredibly beneficial. It just neutralizes our body. It supports our vagus nerve and our entire nervous system. It just reduces stress overall. And then having a really great bedtime routine. So I can just like give some ideas, but of course everyone should just do whatever feels best for them. I do believe that we should all take a step back at this time of the day from electronics and from blue light and switch to more flicker light bulbs or candlelight. It is summertime over here, so you know it doesn't really even get dark fully until 9 p.m. So like, I'm like, that's great. You know, we can just, you know, use the natural daylight until then, and we have a lot of windows in our place. So really just cutting back on all blue light and technology and just anything that causes stress. So just taking a step back and allowing your system to just relax. Like let your system know, your nervous system. And it starts with your brain. So like let your brain know, but you can also use your body to let your brain know this, hey, we're relaxed. So sometimes that's a bath for me. Sometimes that's reading a book. Sometimes that is a a walk as well. I mean, we always go on a little family walk with our dog after dinner, but just finding what works for you. And it could be foam rolling or stretching. So just finding, you know, whatever works for you so that you can wind down for the night. I love supplementing with magnesium glycinate. I just take a complex that has malate and glycinate and oxide. And also an herbal support as well. So I formulated an herbal sleep and nervous system support that has valerian, lavender, passion flower, ashwagandha in it. And it's really just to support the nervous system. So you can even take it during the day, but especially support with deep sleep at night. Because again, like I mentioned before, if you're sleeping well, you're going to wake up feeling great on a surface level. You're going to feel great because you're going to like, I have energy to do stuff and to work and to move my body. But deep down, your body, your hormones, your cells, everything's going to be working better if you slept well.
I am listening to this and I'm just thinking, so if I'm obviously postpartum and I'm in this like phase of my life where my sleep is so disturbed. And I can relate to all of this so much because I am a very good sleeper. I really feel for you having had issues with insomnia because my husband used to have similar issues. And I'm sort of on the opposite side of that. Like I've always just been able to like go to sleep. Like I have an Oura ring and I always have like perfect scores on everything. Like the amount of time it takes me to go to sleep, like the amount of REM sleep and deep sleep and all that good stuff. And so I relate so much with everything you're saying, like sleep is king. I always say to my clients, like, number one, sleep, because this is the ultimate parasympathetic, right? So like, you know, we want to focus on overall stress reduction, but if you're nailing your sleep, this is the most important thing. And right now I'm in this phase of my life where I'm nursing and just like my first baby, she's up all night nursing. And I really, really feel it. It's incredibly, incredibly difficult. And the knock-on effect is wild. I feel like when you are postpartum, it's like that one time where right. It's kind of difficult because what can you do when your baby's like screaming at night and you're like, ugh, my baby doesn't understand that I need to sleep. But it is so freaking important and I'm nodding at everything that you're saying. And I love your sleep tips because this is a big question that we get because a lot of people struggle, especially with what you were saying earlier on you know, being groggy in the morning and then having that cortisol spike late in the day. And part of the coping mechanisms that we see, and totally understandably so, is a lot of caffeine supplementation and or other either pharmaceuticals or substances to survive through the day. So I can understand why, you know, if you're waking up groggy and you've got a job or you've got kids, you know, people are looking for answers and they don't have them. However, I think talking about the impact of caffeine, everyone handles it differently. One of the things I wrote down, because I get this question a lot, is I would definitely, like you mentioned, be tracking, especially when you're at the beginning of this journey, if you will. And let's say we're talking about sleep, the decisions you made that day and how that's impacting your quality of sleep. So if you're wondering the impact that caffeine is having, for example, or wine or whatever on you, write down like the last cup of coffee you had. And if you do have some way to track your sleep in whatever method, it doesn't have to be an Oura ring. It can even be like how you feel in the morning. That's the best way to track, you know, what's going on in your body. Make sure to be like writing it down and reflecting because, you know, you mentioned you do something perhaps not with caffeine, but you know, like you are reflecting upon your decisions, let's say monthly. I do this every night as well. And it's absolutely changed my life. So like at the end of the day, I'm reflecting on what went well and not just like what I ate and what I did, but how I was thinking, like my frame of mind, my routines, what worked and didn't, and what I want to change the next day and my intentions behind it. And it's in doing this that I've been able to catch the tiny little things that make the biggest impact. So if you are in this journey and you're like wondering like, okay, well, how do I know when I can have you know, coffee, or if I should be taking a walk, or what time I should turn the lights off, or when I should go to bed. I think that you should be recording this. And it is in being very intentional about your decisions that you move the needle in really, really powerful ways. So it's never going to be like a one size fits all, or just like this one thing that you do. As much as it, and I'm sure you get this too, you get a client or a message that's like, okay, so what is it? What's the thing? How are we going to do it? Like, when am I going to feel it? And it's never going to be one thing. Certain things can, you know, have a bigger impact, but ultimately it's the culmination of a series of intentional decisions that are individual to you and your lifestyle, paired with the way that you interpret the world and the way that you decide to see things and perceive things in your day-to-day that's going to impact this regulation. So this is absolutely such an internal job. I don't know if you would agree, yes, but this is what was running through my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so happy that you mentioned postpartum. And I'm like, I was just like getting excited over here. I'm like, okay, I want to talk. So I get asked all the time, especially a lot over the last 2 years. So my sister and my sister-in-law have been having babies, and it's so exciting to have nieces and nephews and just grandbabies running around the family now. So I've been working super close with them. I mean, they're my sisters, you know, like I've been working incredibly close with each of them separately. My sister-in-law has 2 babies and my sister just had her first this past fall. So really working with them, I understand that, you know, every woman has a very different experience in postpartum, of course. And I'm very aware of that, and I'm very respectful of that as well. But I just from my sisters and just having worked with women as well, you know, coming off of birth control and then, you know, with their goal of getting pregnant, I've also had a lot of my, you know, women that I've seen in my private clinic also get pregnant, and they don't want to leave me. So they're like, I want to keep working with you. So I've, you know, I've really, I'm not a doula, I'm not a midwife, but I have learned so much. I've read so much research and books and just all the things so that I can support them. And so I want to mention just some like tips for everyone who's listening, because, you know, a lot of women are like, I just feel like my body is primed, you know, to take on this little sleep. And some women are like, I do not feel like my body is primed at all for that, and I feel terrible. So I do have some like tips for everyone listening. And then I also would love to like just kind of conclude that part of the conversation with some vitality herbs that are postpartum safe. That are worth consuming, because like you mentioned before, a lot of women tend to get caffeine hooked during this time. And there are herbs that you can consume, because caffeine doesn't build up the body, right? Like it doesn't build up the systems. It's a quick burst of energy. So how do we build up the systems of the body so that we do feel great, so that we can lower stress naturally, and that we can feel energized? And so I'll give some herbs, but the postpartum period, which refers to the time immediately after giving birth, can be super challenging, especially because of that sleep deprivation. And this is because newborns often have these irregular sleep patterns, wake up frequently for feeding, diaper changes, comfort, etc. And this can leave new mothers feeling just totally exhausted and struggling to get adequate sleep. So here are some strategies that I love. So prioritizing sleep, and I know this sounds crazy challenging, but prioritizing sleep whenever possible. So when the baby is sleeping, try to rest as well, instead of focusing on other tasks such as like cleaning or whatever it is. I watched my sister-in-law do this when we were supporting her with my nephew, who was, I mean, at the time, 16 months old, and she was about to have baby number 2. So Braxton and I went in and we were helping them. And whenever my nephew was sleeping, she was sleeping too. She's like, okay, I'm going down for a nap as well. So really just prioritizing sleep. It may look messy and kind of scattered, but just do it. And accept help as well. I mean, like Braxton and I literally flew in to another state to support them. Like ask for support, whether it's friends, family, whoever it is, ask for support. And establish a sleep routine. So both for both you and your baby can be incredibly helpful. And, you know, this goes obviously much deeper than this. And I mean, I'm sure you could probably find someone to come on your podcast to talk about like establishing a sleep routine, but I know that I've talked to many women who have done this and they all are like, it was so worth it. So worth it. Staying hydrated and eating very nutritious meals is going to support you as well. Again, giving you that energy. And seeking support, like getting together with other mothers and asking for support and just having people who can listen to you as well. And some herbs that I really like for vitality, and some of these will be ones that are TCM herbs and Ayurvedic herbs. I love traditional Chinese medicine, but regardless of, you know, the medicine that it comes from, it just supports recovery, it replenishes energy, it promotes overall well-being during the postpartum period. So Shatavari, I really love. This is used in Ayurveda and it's commonly recommended for postpartum women. It's believed to nourish and support the female reproductive system, to help balance hormones after pregnancy, and to promote lactation. I also love American ginseng. It's considered an adaptogenic herb in traditional Chinese medicine, and it's believed to provide energy, support stamina, and is to help a woman's body cope with stress and fatigue that commonly comes with postpartum. I love nettle as well. Nettle is a very nutrient-rich herb that can be supportive during the postpartum period. Even if you're not postpartum, I love nettle as well because it's so rich in vitamins and minerals, particularly iron, which can be depleted during after childbirth. So it's also a tonic, which I love. I also love ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is in my sleepy support, actually. It's an adaptogenic herb that's widely used in Ayurveda. It's believed to support the body's stress response and just promote relaxation and enhance vitality. Again, whether you're postpartum or not, ashwagandha is just amazing. But for my postpartum ladies, it really helps to deal with the stress and the fatigue and the hormone disruptions that can come, not always, but that can come with postpartum. Raspberry leaf is another one that I love. That one is also often used during pregnancy, as well as raspberry leaf is just like the woman's herb. Like it's just used, I feel like, all throughout a woman's life. And there are many other like women's herbs as well, but not all of them are like recommended to be used all the time, right? Like dengui or chaste tree, right? Like those are also known as female herbs, but those aren't necessarily to be used during pregnancy, for example. So I just love raspberry leaf so much, and it tones and strengthens the uterus. It supports postpartum healing. It promotes lactation. It's just amazing. Lemon balm is also an incredible one that will support relaxation and help to reduce anxiety and stress. So I made a big batch of that for my sister, a big batch of lemon balm. I mean, other herbs were in it too, but lemon balm was definitely in it. Holy basil, also known as tulsi, is a very sacred herb in Ayurveda. It is also an adaptogen. Well, it has adaptogenic properties. All herbs have many different actions, so it's not just one or the other. It's believed to also just support the body resilience to stress and just promote relaxation. And there are more too, you know, like there are plenty of other herbs. I'm like alfalfa is another really great one. I actually included that one in my sister's little tea formula that I made for her. So usually the method of drinking these during postpartum would be tea. You can totally take tincture as well, but usually tea is just, it's very gentle. So there are many herbs. And so all of these herbs, I know I just like literally went on a little rant, but all of these herbs are just going to support in reducing stress and promoting overall health and vitality.
I'm literally writing this down, even though I know I can listen to it later, because I'm like, oh my God, this is so useful. It doesn't matter, because I will, for everyone listening, we will write them down. They'll be in the show notes. So I know everyone's going to like be like frantically taking notes because this is so useful.
Yeah. Also, everyone go over and follow. So both my page and Peace Love Hormones. So Peace Love Hormones, we're posting. I'm constantly posting my herbal formulations on there, whether it's an herbal mocktail, or it's a postpartum herbal tea, or it's a bath blend. Like I'm constantly posting herbal recipes, and I also always include the benefits.
Yes. I mean, we will, you are such an MVP to follow. Like if you are looking for actionable tips, things that will literally enhance your healing in your life, then you are a must follow. So we will include everything in the show notes. We will also talk about how to work with you because I know everyone's going to have this question, including myself. So, okay, let me ask then in terms of herbal supplementation or supplementation in general, people want to know what you would recommend, because it's interesting. I was talking to, I don't know if you are familiar with who Rebecca Faria is. She's a lymphatic drainage expert massage from Brazil who's in California. Have you heard of her?
I haven't, but I already love her. I love
what she does. She's amazing. She is amazing. She brought like a little taste of Brazil to LA and is now kind of like dominating the lymphatic system education space in the US. And I literally was interviewing her last week and we were talking all about how to support the lymphatic system. And one of the things she mentioned in her morning routine was that after she drinks her water, after her series of sort of like detox habits and rituals, she drinks a tea before she's eaten anything. And she drinks a specific herb that I don't remember the name. I couldn't pronounce it if I tried, from like the Brazilian forest. But I want to know, from your perspective, what would be like something, and I know it kind of depends on the situation, but perhaps if someone is like, I'm just looking to support, I don't know, energy levels, mood in the morning. You mentioned a few for sleep, but maybe just something for sleep. And then in general, something to support stress. Like if you're trying to heal your nervous system and you're doing, let's say you're doing lots of different things alongside, because we take a holistic approach always. So alongside all the things you're doing, what could they bring in to be sipping on during the day to support regulating their nervous system? So yeah, so three different categories: when they wake up in the morning, before they go to bed, and what can they be sipping on throughout the day to support regulating their nervous system and managing stress?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. So when I wake up in the morning, I usually actually, first things first, I'm supporting like my liver, my gallbladder, my kidneys when I wake up. And I think that's just incredibly important in general. I love consuming my bitters, my organic herbal bitters support, which also does gently stimulate the vagus nerve as well. So really beneficial to not just consume when you wake up to start your day off right, but also before eating breakfast or before eating any meal. I take my bitters before every meal. So a lot of the herbs that I mentioned, well, all of the herbs that I mentioned that are postpartum safe for energy and vitality are also safe to consume as well, even if you're not postpartum. And those, again, are just amazing. So in addition to those, I love astragalus. I love ashwagandha. Rhodiola is another adaptogenic herb known for its stress-reducing properties, and it helps to improve energy and focus, like cognitive health and also just overall resilience to stress. I love licorice root as well. It's just so beneficial. I have it in my Soothe herbal support, which is for hormone regulation, for cycle regulation, and to prevent PMS and any type of hormone imbalance. But I have licorice in there, and I have the licorice peony, Chinese peony root combination, which is just so beneficial for like PCOS, so just for overall hormone balance and regulation. Also, I feel like most people don't talk about how licorice root is so adrenal supportive and helps to regulate cortisol levels as well. And therefore, it also promotes stress resiliency. So I love licorice root. I love chamomile. Gotu Kola is an herb that helps to calm the mind and enhance cognitive function and to reduce anxiety. So I don't really have like, there's not one that I would say like, oh, you should take Gotu Kola at 8 a.m. and you should take the chamomile at 8 p.m. Like, I don't really have guidelines. I'm more so, it really, when I'm working with someone, first we do a whole intake form and session. It's like, well, what are like the main struggles, you know? And those main struggles, what are the main root causes? And therefore, we match up the herbs and how you consume the herbs. Is it tea? Is it tincture? Are you consuming it via bath? So we really decide like the specific herbs, the method of application, and the frequency and the dosing of it based off of that. But when we're talking about, because your question is just like overall vitality and resiliency and stress reduction. So these herbs that I'm naming, you can drink it in the morning. I usually don't so much, you know, especially like the more nervine herbs, nervine herbs as in like valerian and lavender, I would consume those more closer to, it doesn't have to be like right before bedtime, but more so in the evening, especially because valerian, for example, for some people, it's a little bit more sedative than others. I have one of my really great friends is a naturopath doctor in Canada. She loves my sleepy support, which has valerian in it. She takes it in the middle of the day. I, on the other hand, valerian makes me sleepy. So if I'm having a panic attack, I will for sure take that. But if I'm not having a panic attack and it's more so like, oh, I feel a little like, feel a little jazzed up and a little anxious right now, like I've been on the go all day, I'll drink, you know, some lavender chamomile tea instead of taking my valerian tincture. I'll kind of save that for the evening once I know like, okay, I don't really have to be productive anymore. I don't have to be on Zoom calls, you know. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, it's also just really worth mentioning that herbs always do act a little bit different in everyone's systems. Oh, skullcap. I didn't mention skullcap, which is a calming herb that helps reduce nervous tension and promote relaxation. And it also supports healthy sleep patterns. So all of these herbs that I named, really, I mean, just consume them when you need it, right? Like, I don't know if I mentioned astragalus. That is like an overall, like that astragalus, everyone should be taking astragalus on a daily basis. It just supports all of the systems of the body. Of course, if you're pregnant, if you're postpartum, always, you know, consider every single herb that I mention and, you know, just make sure that you do your own research as well. Unless it was the ones that I mentioned that were postpartum safe, those are good. But if you're pregnant, like please work one-on-one with an herbalist. Doesn't have to be an herbalist. It can also be like a naturopath doctor, someone who has training and a lot of experience in herbal medicine to know which ones that you can consume and how, again, how to consume it and how much. But the other herbs that I'm naming, again, if you want to drink it first thing in the morning, by all means, go ahead, especially if you're waking up with anxiety. If you're not though, I mean, we're supposed to have higher cortisol levels in the morning. So I don't always have like a stress reducing tea in the morning. Usually I'll start drinking those around like noon, 1 p.m. Does that make sense? You know, because like we want higher, I mean, of course we don't want to be stressed out in the morning. We don't want to be having anxiety and panic attacks. And if that is the case, of course, drink some chamomile or lavender tea or take a tincture with some ashwagandha or passion flower or lemon balm. But, you know, other than that, just drink your teas throughout like the later half of the day and the afternoon. Be tremendously helpful to, you know, build that energy and that stress resiliency up in the afternoon so you don't have to reach for that mid-afternoon cup of coffee.
Yes. And I am also a huge fan. We talk about this a lot in HTA about making these practices a ritual from a nervous system standpoint. So obviously you mentioned like if you are consuming, you know, we want to be in parasympathetic, obviously, so that we can really absorb the nutrients and digest our food and all of that great stuff and reap the benefits of hopefully, you know, what we're putting in our body. But I love like when I'm bringing in anything like new from a health standpoint to make it really, really ritualistic and like inject that energy and intention into it. So if someone is like thinking about doing this in their life, I recommend like getting a mug that brings you a lot of joy, putting it on your calendar, building habits around it and injecting that energy into that moment. And it really makes a difference in the effect of like what you're doing. And it also helps you just like pause for a moment of mindfulness and build in those regulation practices throughout your day. So it really is about just punctuating your day with moments of mindfulness and reminding yourself why you're doing it. Because like, all these things that we bring into our body on their own, if we're being, you know, if we're stuck in that state of stress, unfortunately, we won't reap the full benefits of what we're consuming. And so I highly, highly recommend that as like, I know everyone's taking notes here. I know everyone's so excited. I know everyone's going to go to your website and order tinctures and book in and buy whatever. I recommend pairing that action with the intention and reminding yourself that when you punctuate your day to consume, you know, these healing herbs and tinctures and all of that, that you are being mindful of where your mind is at, where your thoughts are at, and you take that time to take a deep breath and to regulate into the moment so that you can truly absorb all the goodness that you're putting in your body. And these slow, tiny moments are how we start to bring in all these modalities and we start to heal. So it's so important, because I have so many clients who buy every single supplement, every single herb, have the perfect, you know, do all the things, but are forgetting the part where we actually have to do the internal work alongside. So, and that's what I love about what you do, Maddie, because you touch on that so much. And like you said, you mentioned it earlier, like so many people don't even touch on stress. And so they're given all these like X, Y, and Z, but these clients are bringing it home and living in stress. And so they're working really hard, but not necessarily reaping the full benefits of what they're doing. So no one or nothing can do the work for you. But if you're doing that internal work and then you're putting in the effort to see someone like Maddie, you're using her amazing tinctures, that's where you're going to get that perfect, like, aha, and get back into homeostasis. So, I mean, let me ask you, because I know we're running out of time here, but you mentioned your morning routine. And I know, because like we love morning routines here, I know everyone's like, oh my God, I'm dying to know what Maddie's morning routine is. With all your expertise that you have and obviously your amazing testimony of healing, do you mind sharing what your morning routine is? And of course, like I know you use your tinctures. I see it on Instagram all the time, like how you use them in the morning, so people can start to incorporate that as well.
Oh, yes. This is one of my favorite questions to answer. So my morning routine always switches up a little bit depending on what phase of my cycle that I'm in. Sometimes I do a little bit of a more, it just depends on what I need, you know, and our needs change throughout our cycle. Sometimes I need more energy boosting things, and sometimes I need more relaxing techniques. So usually this is how my morning goes. So I'll wake up, first things first, I reach over, I grab my basal body thermometer, and I measure my BBT, because I practice the symptothermal method, which is a form of fertility awareness that helps to pinpoint ovulation and track your entire cycle. So I do that first things first. And then I also do, I know Faith, you're going to love this. I immediately, my eyes are still closed at this point, but I just go on a little mini rampage of everything that I'm grateful for. Just mention everything that I'm excited about for the day to come, that I'm grateful for, that happened yesterday, et cetera, that really supports my mind and my perspective on things for the rest of the day. I hop out of bed, I do a little dry brushing. Also, I feel like a lot of people always say, your morning routine sounds so long. And I'm like, it's not really, but also like I make sure that I give myself ample time to do what I need to do, because I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was never given like something at the beginning of my life, my entry into this world, that said you can only have a 20-minute morning routine. Like, and if someone did give me that, I would have thrown it away. You know, yeah. I'm doing what I want. So I do a little dry brush. It just feels so good. I can just feel my lymphs draining. I get the chills. I love my little dry brushing. I do it in front of my red infrared light. I tongue scrape and I brush my teeth first thing, of course, with non-toxic toothpaste. Please, everyone, get non-toxic toothpaste and non-toxic mouthwash as well, because the toxic stuff wipes out a lot of our good bacteria, which we need. And there are so many links to type 2 diabetes. Just do your research. It's out there. So anyway, I do that and I go downstairs, and my morning tonic, this is what it is. So it's a little bit of herbs, but it's also a little bit of some other healing, powerful things. So I have my filtered water. This is unnecessary what I do to it, but if you have a frequency device, please by all means do it. I add some frequency into my water depending on what I'm looking for. If you don't have a frequency device, just scratch what I just said. Take your filtered water, have it warm it up a little bit, add some fresh lemon. I use usually a whole lemon, and I'll squeeze it out for the juice. I add some apple cider vinegar or fire cider if I have fire cider on hand, which is just apple cider vinegar that has been steeped with various herbs, fruits, barks, such as like ginger and horseradish, cinnamon, literally whatever you want. So I do that, add in a little bit of honey, and then I add in my soothe herbals. So I know I mentioned earlier, do like take liver supportive herbals. It can be the bitters. Also my soothe formula, any formula that is hormone supportive has liver supportive herbs in there as well. So you will taste the bitterness, That's you tasting the chemical constituents that have a direct positive impact on your liver and on your gallbladder. So I put my Soothe in there and I just sip on that. I sip on that outside as long as it's not raining. I mean, but honestly, even if it's raining, I'll be outside with an umbrella. Yeah, or even not with an umbrella. Like if I, you know, am planning on showering anyway, like I will just let myself get drenched. Be outside, like just listen to the nature sounds, or if you don't have nature sounds around you, listen to the cars, like just be present, sit outside. If you have little kiddos and they're awake, like let them play in the grass with you. You can all just, you know, regulate your nervous systems and stick your hands and your feet in the grass and in the dirt. And then I go inside and I make breakfast. I eat that breakfast, and once I'm done with breakfast, I'll clean up and then I'm ready for the day. Like I feel great then. So sometimes I jump right into work. Sometimes I go to a yoga class and I get a workout in before I start my work. It really just depends on like the morning and how much time I have and what my energy is looking like. But the first part of my morning, it really only takes from like waking up to breakfast like an hour. And it's just so amazing because it's like an hour of just totally taking care of myself. And I forgot to mention this, but I should, that my phone is off during this time. So my phone on airplane mode, it's not completely shut off, but it's on airplane mode. So I'm not getting texts, I'm not getting calls, I'm not on social media, because our brains are in this beautiful, delicate state in the morning that anything that we do, anything that we read, listen to, look at, and watch, say to ourselves as well. These also are our endo thoughts, our endo environment as well, just dramatically impacts our brain health and how our cognitive function. So I'm very, very, like at the very least, I stick to that. Like even when we're on vacation and perhaps I don't have all of my, you know, health equipment and my health hacks, like I will still not look at my phone for at least the first hour of waking. And as long as I do that, I feel great. I'm happy to be alive. I'm grateful to be alive. And I just do not subscribe to the technology madness until at least an hour of being awake.
It's funny you say that, because I just went to Mexico for my best friend's bachelorette party. And it was so funny because I'm in the room with my best friend and another friend who it's like maybe 6 a.m. and I like tiptoe at this bachelorette outside to the outside shower, like in our room, and close the door. And I have my headphones and I'm doing my lymphatic drainage massage under the water. I have my feet. There's like a little plot of like earth in the like shower area. And I have my feet on the earth doing a lymphatic drainage massage. And then I have my headphones on after doing my meditation. And I'm like, even if it's just like a tiny little thing, like it's the make or break for my day. And so like, I'm like you, I like, even if I'm on vacation or whatever, I still like pick, you know, those little things that make the huge difference in my day. And like of all things at a bachelorette, like here I am, this is 32, like doing lymphatic drainage and like Joe Dispenza meditation at a bachelorette. But yes, it makes such a big difference, like when you find what works. And I was writing down a lot of what you said. And I want to say two things before I ask you this question though, but, or maybe just one thing that I know a lot of people are going to be listening. And I get this too, when I share my routines and people are like, but I have children, or it's not that easy for me, mostly because I have children is what people say actually. And I would say like perfection is the enemy of progress. So don't worry if you have, like, if you are in a season like I am in right now, where you have two small people who are not consistent and they wake up at random times and they need you and they want a nurse and they have blowouts or whatever. Just do what you can when you can, because every little bit helps. And like you said, like small things that aren't so small, like just not looking at your phone. If like in the morning, you take your kids outside, you put them on the earth, you don't have your phone on, and you do some deep breathing and you say what you're grateful for. It doesn't have to be perfect, but just start with doing what you can and know that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I think that it's this all or nothing trauma response that we work through really deeply within my program that holds people back from successfully implementing these new routines. Obviously, everyone is in a different season, and the skill of like perhaps also skills that you have, like it takes time to build up these skills and to carve out this time and find this balance. So start with little things, like whatever resonates with you most, and you can build on that and know that the morning routine doesn't have to look exactly like yours or like mine to make a massive impact on your day. So it's truly like that internal work, like you said, of course, like I'm going to be a huge fan of that because like you said, you're going to love this, but you're right. Like our brainwaves are really slow when we wake up. The door to the subconscious is wide open because the analytical mind is off. And the analytical mind is really what separates the conscious and the subconscious mind. So right when you wake up, there is no door there. So you're kind of like a child. Like you tell a child that Santa Claus is real and they're like, yep, Santa Claus is real. Like there's no questioning. It's just like, yep, that's cool. Santa Claus is going to come down the chimney and bring me presents. That's what happens when you're suggestible. You're highly suggestible when you wake up because you're coming out of sleep where your brain waves are the absolute slowest. Your body is still in a sense of sleep and you're basically taking information as fact. So like you said, if you take your phone out or God forbid you read the news or something like that, you are literally pouring that information into your subconscious mind without really analyzing it at all. And that manifests in so many different ways, but mostly manifests in dysregulation in the nervous system. And so starting by focusing on what you're grateful for, reflecting on your intentions, whatever you said, and then connecting with the earth and people and nourishing all of that good stuff is one of the healthiest things you can do, not just for your body, but well, you know, the body and the brain are one, but like for the brain, for the nervous system. And I love how when I ask all these incredibly healthy people on my podcast, like, what is your morning routine? Yes, of course, like small things are different, but the theme is always the same across. Like it's always a little bit of something for the body, a little bit of something for the mind, and then connecting with the earth. So however that looks for you, whip out your little journal you started for your caffeine and start trialing and airing how you feel as you try to implement new things into your day. And it will help you sleep better. It will help you feel better and it'll give you more time the next day to have a bigger morning routine. So it all kind of like comes together. But I wanted to ask you about your morning drink because personally, I'm always interested in like right now, like I have just like a big cup of like lukewarm filtered water. And then I basically have my breakfast and then I drink my Element tea, like as I work out, like I always get on the bike as either like a just wake up because I'm always like shattered from my children or a pre-workout for whatever I end up doing, like lifting or whatever. But I'd be interested personally in bringing something else into it. So would you drink your, like, would this drink be in place of like when I drink just plain water is my first question. And my second question is if we're putting soothe in our tincture, do we also need bitters and can we take soothe? Like, can someone like me take soothe even though I'm in a different phase of like, you know, I'm not working on like my cycle right now. I'm obviously breastfeeding like every 2 hours. I don't really have a cycle. So, or I do, I don't know. So yeah, those are my questions.
Yes. So this does replace. So this is what I drink first things first. So like, this is my, like my water drink. I mean, it's mostly water because I'm only really putting in like, I don't measure it out, but like a tablespoon's worth of apple cider vinegar. And then, you know, You put in 2 milliliters, 1 to 2 milliliters of your herbal tincture. So it's mostly water, right? It's just Incredibly more hydrating than a normal water, like, right? Just like plain water. So yes, this is in replacement of water. And I put in my mason jar. So that's like, you know, I mean, if I fill it up all the way, that's like 24 ounces. So it's a good amount of water. And your other question was, so putting soothe in, if you are breastfeeding, I do not recommend taking soothe because soothe will lower prolactin levels. Because if you're not breastfeeding, you know, you don't need high prolactin levels. In fact, that is actually a cause of an issue if you are not breastfeeding. And that can throw other hormones out of wonk and create really negative ovulation symptoms and PMS symptoms around our period. So if you are in postpartum and you are no longer breastfeeding and you want to get your cycle back and regulated, for sure take soothe. If you are not in postpartum because you've never been pregnant before or it's been years and years and years and you just want cycle support and hormone support, soothe is also for you. Bitters indirectly impacts hormones because it supports your liver, it supports detoxification, it supports your gut health, it supports digestion as well, your overall digestion system. And like I mentioned before, your vagus nerve as well, because it does. We have bitter receptors starting in our tongue and in our mouth and all throughout our digestive intestinal tract. So it really does support just the entire system and in your vagus nerve. So I would put bitters in. Again, you know, especially like the parsley, that can actually dry up milk supply. So just be cautious with that one if you are breastfeeding, and maybe you won't take that one if you are breastfeeding in the current moment. But again, as always, I always say like do your own like research, right? Like me search, you search, like look up the herbs in it and also assess where you are at in your hormone health journey / fertility journey to decide if it's right for you. And we have so much information on our website. If you ever are in doubt, like reach out to me or someone on my team, which are full of herbalists, will help you out.
Oh, sorry, just to clarify. So if you are not breastfeeding, you can put Soothe in this tincture. Do you add bitters as well, or is there that component in Soothe?
That component's in Soothe, not as much, right? Like there are mostly hormone regulatory herbs in Soothe. But again, if we're regulating our hormones, we have to work on the liver. So a lot of them are liver supportive herbs as well. But bitters I don't take in the morning unless, let's say, we have like a heavy breakfast or for whatever reason, my digestive system needs support later on in the morning, I will take bitters. I also take bitters on an empty stomach. You can totally take it on an empty stomach. But usually, I mean, bitters is always with me, whether we are eating at home or we're eating out and traveling. And I take it before lunch. I take it before dinner as well.
Okay. So can you take bitters if you're breastfeeding?
So that is where I mean, again, do your own little you search, but I would say no, because it can dry up milk supply.
Okay. I just wanted to understand that. Okay.
Yeah. The herbs are very astringent. So astringent is great, you know, especially when you're, you know, considering the uterus and you and the reproductive organs and wanting to strengthen and tone those organs after pregnancy. However, you know, I mean, especially while breastfeeding, it's just this beautiful moment of life. And I know it can be very tough for many as well, but to a certain extent, you know, it's not that your body isn't your own. Your body is always your own, but you are taking care of baby. Baby needs milk. So, you know, you don't want to be taking too astringent of herbs because that can dry up milk supply. If you take bitters here and there, is it going to totally throw up your milk supply? No. But if you're taking it more on like, you know, because my customers, my consumers are really taking these herbals very diligently, like especially bitters, multiple times a day, every single day. So again, like let's say you have a meal that's really hard to digest, you're breastfeeding, but you still want to take some bitters, you can go ahead and take some bitters. But it's not something that should be taken very regularly until you are done breastfeeding.
That's really good to know. Okay, so now my question is, where can people find your tinctures? What countries do you sell them in, and how can they work with you?
So they can find my tinctures on peacelovehormones.com. And we ship right now to the US and to Canada. I have had people from the UK, from Europe, from Australia, even from Dubai, which has been the furthest one, order my tinctures. How they're doing it, I don't always know. I think a lot of them, at least the ones that I've talked to, are delivering to friends or family in the US or in Canada, and then they will ship it to them. I think the woman in Dubai said that she actually set up a mail forwarding address. So people are finding ways. We are not international yet. Just to give some insight as to where like my head is at with that whole process, because I really have tried, and I even found, you know, a regulatory agency in London who is helping me with it. It's a lot of work for me to get over there. And honestly, I feel like it's better to actually just partner with other clinical herbalist and naturopath doctors in the countries that I want to be in and send them supply that they can give out to their patients and their customers. So I think that's probably the route that I will go in, because we just have, I mean, we have such a big market in the US and in Canada alone, and I haven't even tapped into half of it, you know? So I really want to establish my ground, so to say, here. But Braxton and I are really considering moving to Spain or Portugal in the next few years. So if I move over there, then obviously it'll be much easier. It's hard enough to own a business, but to own a business in other countries and not to be there. I mean, I even feel like that with Canada sometimes. And, you know, I don't have a warehouse in Canada. Thank goodness. That would be a lot more stressful on me, even though it would definitely save me cost. Because because shipping from the US to Canada is not cheap, but at least it's all still here and we're just shipping over to Canada. So Canada, that took me months and months and months to, you know, kind of figure out that process. So it's not a, I'll definitely be in Europe at some point, but right now it's just, it's so much easier for me. You know, we have a very small and conscious team over here and I just, it hasn't been on my, it hasn't been at the top of my to-do list.
Totally. Okay. How can we book with you? Like, do you see one-to-one clients?
I do. It's definitely not a main component of my business anymore. My, my motto with that is like, if someone is meant to see me, they will see me and it will be amazing. I do see people one-on-one. I usually though refer people to my podcast. I have so many podcast episodes and articles on my website and just so much information on social media that between the education, the free education, and then my herbal tinctures, that solves, I feel like 99.9% of the issues that women come to me with. And then if there's something more, then of course they can book one-on-one with me. And I'm always, you know, it's always such a joy to talk to women from all over the country and all over the world. And that can also be found on my website to book with me. And it's at the bottom of my website though, I must mention. It's not easy to find, but it is there. Just scroll all the way down.
Well, I'm going to add all the information in the show notes. So, you know, your social media handles, your website, where people can buy your products. I'm going to list out your recommendations that you've mentioned. And yes, everyone will who's wondering and asking if they haven't already clicked on the links, please scroll down to the show notes so you can figure everything out from there. But I just want to thank you so much, Maddie, for your time. Like this was very actionable. Like I love it when I feel like someone can listen to a podcast and they can take like 5 to 10 things away, implement it right away and be like, wow, this made a difference in my life. And I know that your time is really valuable. We spoke for a very long time, but it's going to impact so, so, so many women. So I just want to thank you so, so much. And personally, I feel like I've been taking notes the whole time. So I feel like for me already, like has been so incredibly informative. So I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for having me, Faith. Thank you to everyone who listened as well.